Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with Sarah Norrett Phillips, interim artistic director of Buffalo's Ujima Company. After 35 years as an Emmy Award-winning broadcast television writer, producer, and executive in Buffalo and Detroit, Sarah Norrett Phillips returned to her Buffalo theatrical roots. A trained singer, actress, director, and producer, Sarah has over 40 years of work in the professional theater. A founding member of Ujima Theater Company in 1978, Sarah returned to serve as the company's interim artistic director after the passing of its visionary artistic director, Lorna C. Hill, 4 years ago. Sarah has extensive experience on the Buffalo stage and has performed in dozens of Ujima shows, including all of their original productions. A multiple Buffalo Artie Award nominee and winner, Sarah is also an exceptional director, having helmed many successful Ujima productions, including the smash hit production of The Color Purple the Musical at Shea's 710 Theater earlier this year. In this interview, we talk about Ujima Theater Company, the author Alice Childress, who wrote the play Wedding Band, which Sarah is currently directing, legacies, and the importance of community. I hope you will join the Ujima community and see Wedding Band, running at the Lorna C. Hill Theater from May 9th through 19th. Tickets are available on their website, which is linked in the show notes. And here's my interview with Sarah Norrett Phillips. Sarah Norrett Phillips, how are you today?
I am perfect, Daniel. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for asking. To get started, could you give us a little history of the Ujima Theater?
Sure. Ujima Theater Company is the oldest Black repertory theater company in Western New York. We've been in the process of celebrating our 45th anniversary season, 45 years of producing theater in Western New York. We're very excited about the legacy that we leave in the theater community here. It was founded by Lorna C. Hill, who was an incredible actress, director, activist, who passed away in 2020. And this production is actually a production that she loved personally. This is the third time Ujima has produced it in its 45 years, over 45 years. And in its very first production, Lorna played the part of Julia Augustine, the lead in this play, and I think it was really the start of her legacy. It cemented her as one of the greatest actresses to come out of Buffalo.
Thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about your work with Ujima Company, both in the past and currently?
Sure. So I am a founding member of Ujima Theater Company. Ujima is an ensemble. We established the organization, the company, 45 years ago. My name is on the articles of incorporation, as the lawyer likes to tell me. And for the first over 20 years, I was in Buffalo, and I worked actively on stage, off stage, directing, producing, singing with the theater company and helping to develop what became that ensemble. And then I moved away to Detroit for my television career and was there for, was on television for almost 30 years. When Lorna became ill, she and I remained extremely close, and I was her frequent advisor and confidant. Even during the years I wasn't here, I would come back to see shows very frequently. She would call me when she had needed advice or wanted me to read something that she was considering. When she passed, before she passed, she asked me to, I retired, and she asked me to please come and help the young company through its transition. So that's what I did. I took the position as an interim artistic director. It turns out to be 4 years ago. My, how the time flies. So I have been working with this young ensemble over these 4 years. That first year, of course, was also the year of COVID, and we learned to do a lot of virtual work. That was my background in television. It was very helpful there. We did full-fledged productions on video. Wasn't Reader's Theater. There were plays that we staged in the theater and then streamed. And then we returned to the theater when theaters were allowed to open again. And we have had been very, very active with some wonderful and critically acclaimed productions like American Son and Choir Boy and Spunk. And just in the fall, the huge collaboration with Shays and Second Generation Theater of the Color Purple musical. So yeah, we've been active. And the Color Purple actually opened our 45th anniversary season, and we're going to close it with an iconic Black play, Wedding Band.
That is so fantastic. I want to dive into some questions around The Color Purple and definitely Wedding Band. But before we do, I mean, 45 years is an incredible feat in any sort of nonprofit business and especially a theater. I mean, that is incredible, right? Many theaters maybe can produce one season and can't find their footing or things happen. And 45 years, the amount of kind of love and work and energy that goes into doing that is pretty amazing. I'm wondering if there, through the sort of past, if there's a single production, right, in the past that you're very proud of that you could tell us a little bit about.
I think I'm proudest of the work that was original. We did quite a bit of original work in the early years. There's a play that kind of became a signature piece for us, called And Bid Him Sing. It's a musical, and it's based on the poetry, the dialect poetry of Paul Laurence Dunbar, who was the first Black poet laureate in the United States. And it is a piece that celebrates Black families, Black love, Black music, using his verse in these series of vignettes that are just remarkable snapshots of Black life. And we did that play, oh my goodness, probably 8 or 9 years for Mother's Day. We used to call it our Mother's Day gift to the Black community in Buffalo. And we did it at the old, the original studio arena that then became owned by University of Buffalo, and I think it's now the Town Theater. And we did it on the stage at Shays on the big stage. For me, it was such a unique project. It took us almost 3 years to get it on its feet, with the choreography and the music and collecting the costume pieces, which were all vintage, authentic. It was really quite a production, and beloved by the community. But a huge project. It's probably got a cast of 20. Or 30 people in the big numbers, and many children. I think And Bid Him Sing for me is the thing that touched my heart the most as we were working. One, because it was ours, it was original. Two, because it was a celebration of life and devoid of the difficulty of what it means to be Black in America.
Yes. You know, a few years ago, I was watching the TV show The Chi, and it really struck me in 2021 that there was a scene, and I get a little emotional saying this, but there was a scene where it was just a scene of just young Black children playing. And I thought, how rare we see that in sort of dominant media, right? Of just kids being kids. Yeah. And so, yeah, exactly. So I think that a sort of play of celebration is such an incredible and much needed thing. And I understand why it stayed with you. It brings me to my next question. Would there be a production in the history of Ujima that you'd want to revisit?
Wedding Band is one of them. This is our third time producing Wedding Band over 45 years. The reason we do it is because it's a piece that Alice Childress, to bring up the playwright, is probably one of the most overlooked and under-celebrated playwrights in modern American theater. And she wrote this play, and it was optioned for Broadway, and they wanted her to soften it. It was a play that was a little too difficult, a little too raw, a little too honest about racial hatred in America. She refused to do so. They wanted her to put more background into the Herman character, who's the white male, and she was steadfast that this was a Black woman's story, and so she didn't want to make that alteration, and it languished on as an option for Broadway for over 7 years before it was ever produced. And for us, it is a play that When I decided to bring it back for this particular season, I did it, one, because it's an important part of Ujima's canon, in that we've done it multiple times, although it hasn't been staged here for over 20 years, so it's been a long time. But also because I found it particularly telling and difficult that the themes of this play, which are racial hatred and community ostracization and a pandemic that is killing people by the thousands, all converging at the same time, reminded me vividly about what we have endured in the very recent past here in the United States. I talked to people about the show and I said, I think it's a reminder for me of how far we haven't come as a nation. The issues are still prevalent, rampant, worse than they've been in so long as it relates to race relationships and race relations in this country. And then, of course, we survived COVID and we still live with COVID. That again slaughtered multiple thousands of people. So there were just these consistent storylines, and I thought this is a play that is as relevant today as it was in 1966 when she wrote it, as it was in 1918, which is the period of time that she was writing about. And the other part was I looked at the members of the membership of the ensemble. And we had the bodies to do it. You know, we had the actors and actresses in-house to mount this incredible masterpiece. So that's what we're doing.
You are in the process of directing Alice Childress's Wedding Band. And she, as you said, she is sort of having a renaissance, which I think is incredible. I saw Trouble in Mind, I think, a few years ago in New York, and I was just completely blown away by the writing. And I thought, this is akin to Miller or O'Neill or Williams, the sort of incredible great playwrights that we often sort of put in a pedestal and have sort of canonized. And Ms. Childress should be there because the writing is so extraordinary. It's extraordinary writing.
Yeah, and the thing about Alice's work, she was a member of an early Black theater company called ANT, American Negro Theater. Out of that group, which was in Harlem, came the likes of Sidney Poitier, Ruby Dee. They were her counterparts. The story goes that Alice was frustrated with the lack of parts that there were for Black women in theater. What a surprise. And Sidney Poitier said to her, well, then why don't you go write some? And the word is that within 2 weeks, she had written her first play, Florence, which is a one act that, again, was just recently rediscovered, reproduced about 3 years ago in the Shakespeare in New Jersey. And Trouble in Mind has had a renaissance. Wine in the Wilderness was recently brought back and had a short stint on Broadway. And so was Wedding Band. So yeah, she's definitely being rediscovered. But she was an extremely prolific writer. In fact, she's recognized as the only Black woman to have either written or produced or published plays over four decades. So there's a large canon of work. Some of them better known than others, but all of them important.
You know, it's so interesting, too, as you sort of spoke about the inspiration for her, or someone saying to her, well, there aren't a lot of plays that, you know, feature Black women or women of color. Why don't you write some? And the same sort of things have been said to Katori Hall and Dominique Morisseau. And like, it's still this sort of issue that still keeps coming up, right? Like that's that I'm glad that we're sort of seeing this play now and are able to feature stories of the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fascinating, you look at the history of her work, people recognized how good the writing was. Mm-hmm. All three of those plays were commissioned by Broadway. Mm-hmm. They were supposed mm-hmm. to be. And Alice's political activism wouldn't allow her to diminish the content of the work. And in fact, Wedding Band was supposed to be the first play on Broadway, first Black play on Broadway. And because she refused to do it, that history mantle was passed on to Lorraine Hansberry, Raisin in the Sun. And you see what became of her history and her trajectory in theatrical canon. And you often wonder if Alice had been allowed to, what would her trajectory had been. She was a very strong, in fact, toward the end of her career, she stopped writing plays that had that were interracial. She wanted to only write about Black people and ordinary people and tell their stories. They're the stories she found the most interesting. She said, I don't want to talk about those people who are accomplished and who, you know, have made their marks on the world. I want to just tell the stories of people, ordinary people, and give their voice and their import just as much attention as others.
Mm. We sort of danced around this a little bit, but I'm interested if you could share with our listeners, for those of people that may not be familiar, what is the plot of Wedding Band?
Wedding Band has a subtitle. It's called a love-hate story in black and white. That's the subtitle. And it's about an interracial couple in 1918, South Carolina. And of course, there were anti-miscegenation laws in place. It was illegal for Blacks and whites to mix in any kind of personal relationship. As love would have it, a white man falls in love with a Black woman, and they try to navigate a world in which their relationship is against the law. It is World War I, so there's a thread in this story about what it was like to be a Black soldier in the U.S. military that's very striking. It is the middle of the Spanish flu pandemic, which killed well over 600,000 Americans when it was raging in the United States. So there's this thread of this illness that is attacking the community. And then Herman falls ill from the flu, from the influenza, while he is visiting Julia in her home, which is in the middle of the Black community. And that is where the crux of the drama begins, because now the entire community has to deal with the fact that there is a white man who's in their community, in a Black woman's home, in her bed, and they have to get his white family to come into their community and get him out before the police are alerted or any trouble happens. And how they navigate that is difficult and raw, but there's such truth-telling in it that it's hard to look away. The performances are remarkable. For people who know Gabriella McKinley, she's playing the lead of Julia Augustine. Ben Caldwell is playing the part of Herman. Mary Mobius is playing the part of Herman's mother. Tanika Holmes is the landlady who owns the tenement properties that Julia lives on. So it's a real all-star cast of actors from Buffalo that are going to be playing these roles. There's also humor. There's also music. You know, I try to tell people, just because we're telling true stories and tough stories, it's not without relief. There is certainly that as well as a sense of a community and community coming together to try to protect this woman who finds herself in this very tenuous situation.
What has surprised you about directing the play?
I don't know that I've had a lot of surprises, other than how Alice's writing is so poetic. Her use of words, you know, you look at the greats and even someone like August Wilson, who knows how to write in a way that people truly speak and to make the words cut through and paint the pictures in ways that become vivid, right? We know who these people are. We understand their thoughts, and getting the actors to embrace that, you know, to paint those pictures with her words is part of what we've been spending a lot of time on, and making it authentic, making the sound authentic, making the accents authentic, so that we are doing justice to Ms. Childress's work.
Thank you. Why do people need to see Wedding Band?
I think people should see it because it's a reflection who we are as a people. It's a reflection of this country. Not always pretty, right? Not always friendly, often difficult, particularly as it relates to race relations. At the heart of this story, it is a love story. These are people who learned to love each other despite the hate, who fought to love each other despite the hate. And I think that there's a hope about that, about who we can be, how resilient we can be as a people, and that hope is not lost.
We spoke a little bit about kind of Alice Childers being kind of rediscovered, or I wrote the word down as I wrote it on my notes. I thought, what an interesting word, sort of represented, but also it's re-presented, right? Mm-hmm. We're being re-presented her incredible work. Are there any other authors that you think need to be re-presented to audiences?
Oh, that's a great question, Daniel. I'd have to think about that a little bit. There are quite a few playwrights who wrote extensively during this same period of time. And people know of those who broke through, the Langston Hughes's of the world. But, you know, the work of the Negro Ensemble Company and the writers who were part of the Negro Ensemble Company, you know, Philip Dean Hayes, who wrote Sty of the Blind Pig. There are so many wonderful works that are out there that are vivid in the lives of African-American theater, but not known by the general theater. And that's why it's important that companies like Ujima do the work that they do, so that we can keep that work active, we can keep that work alive, and we can introduce it to new audiences.
Maybe an unfair question, and I don't necessarily know if the sort of verbiage is the correct in asking it, but I hope that intent comes through. Other words, like, what are your hopes for the future of Ujima Company?
That it goes on another 45 years. You know, this institution, because it's an institution now, right? It's, you know, got 45 years. It's had so many ups and downs. It hasn't been an easy ride. It is by no means stable in the same way that many of the larger white theaters in this community and other communities are from a financial basis. And I would expect, as history is prone to repeat itself, there will be ups and down periods of time. I hope more up than down. Right now, it is on very solid footing. It is extremely stable. It's in better shape than it has been at several times over its 45-year history. And what it needs is for more people to come, for more people to support, for more people to donate, you know, for people to think about it as an important community resource. And that's an important part of Ujima's legacy. I think it's part of why this company has continued to exist, because we see ourselves as a community resource. We do work that is reflective of people and voices that are not seen and not heard. And we advocate for that. We do it unabashedly. It's who we are. It's why we do what we do. And I think the community in general sees the value of that. Even a community that doesn't have the money to give us endowments, they come, they bring their children, they bring their grandchildren to our classes. And so that is where the legacy continues. And I hope it can continue to do that. We've got a very, very solid young core of artists who are now in key positions in the theater company. And so it is, from an internalized basis, it's set to go for another 30 years as long as the finances continue to be there to support it.
You speak of the community, and I can only tell our listeners that it is so palpable when you walk in the space. Can you tell us a little bit about the space where Wedding Band will be taking place?
Absolutely. We are doing it in our home, which is the Lorna C. Hill Theater, and named after Lorna, of course. I think many of your listeners are probably familiar with her and her work. She was just a force of nature in Western New York and on stages in Western New York. The theater was renamed in her honor last year, and that is at 495 Plymouth Street. It's located inside of former School 77. It's a building that was bought by Push Buffalo and turned into some senior residential housing, some community activities, and then the left wing was renovated into the theater that we occupy. It's a beautiful 130, 150 seat theater with all of the, you know, modern bells and whistles. And so that when people come, they're often very surprised at the level of artistry, the level of professionalism that is presented on that stage, show after show. We invite you to come. We invite you to come early. It is general seating, but there is not a bad seat in the house. It's an intimate space. And we used to laugh when we were young and brash and starting this company is we only have to get them in the door one time. If we get them in the door one time, they'll be back, because we were real sure that our work was that good, right? And I think that's still true. I think that we take a great deal of care to make sure that artistic excellence is at the center of the work that we do. That is what we were taught by Lorna, and we hold that mantle up high. It's a high bar to reach. Not everybody, you know, makes it to hit the bar. But we uphold it, and it guides us so that we can do the work that we do.
I'd love to invite you to answer my last question. But if you don't want to, that's okay. But I'd love to know. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about Lorna and Lorna's legacy. I hope certainly that you are working with us, sort of around and with us for a very, very long time. But do you have any hopes for what your legacy might be?
Oh, boy. I think my legacy's in there. You know what I mean? If you were to come to the theater, there are pictures all over of previous productions. And if you look closely, you'll see me in lots of them. And I think and I hope that the work that I've done these past 4 years to really try to solidify and stabilize the infrastructure so that when I walk away, which will be by the end of the season, I should say that as artistic director, I'll still direct shows from time to time. But I am leaving as an interim artistic director at the end of this season, at the end of June. I am confident that my mark as an administrator, as theater producer, as a director, has not been put on deaf ears, that those seeds have been planted, and that the young artists who are now in place to fill those shoes have what they need so that they can take UGMA to its next level.
Thank you. Those are my questions, but I always like to end by asking, is there anything that you feel was left unsaid or anything you'd like to share?
Nothing that I'd like to share, but I would just like to really invite people to come. It is truly a remarkable piece. I think that if you see it, you're going to go home and you're going to tell others that they have to come. We had to truncate the run of the show because we had, in fact, a COVID incident among the cast. And so it's only going to run for 2 weekends. It's got 9 performances. So go to ujimacoing.org and get your tickets. Please come. It's a great show. It's important. And we look forward to seeing you.
Great. Thank you very much, Sarah. It was lovely speaking with you.
You too. Take care.
It was great chatting with Sarah, and I hope you will see Wedding Band playing the Lorna C. Hill Theater from May 9th through 19th. Tickets are available at the link in the show notes. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Addison Schoonmaker engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides, hosted bimonthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.